Arm Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast here to share a winning strategy for Father's Day from our partners at Sterling Roastery. If your dad treats his morning coffee like a pregame ritual, you need to introduce him to the Sterling Roastery lineup. This isn't that stale, over-roasted stuff sitting on our grocery shelf. Sterling roasts their beans multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. The smart play? A coffee subscription. He gets to choose his grind, from French press to espresso, and his favorite roast, depth. It's a world-class lineup of Java that shows up like a reliable veteran on a perennial powerhouse team. Go to sterlingsoap.com and set him up. He'll thank you with every cup. That's sterlingsoap.com.
Another episode of the Professional Football Researchers Association podcast. John Bozica and George Bozica joining you on the Sports History Network, and pleased to be joined by another author tonight as Philip J. Lowry going to join us. And he is the author of Green Gridirons, a statistical and anecdotal celebration of the football fields where major league professional football games have been played. There's also some information regarding college stadiums in there that's fascinating as well. And if you recognize Phil's name, it's probably because of his other book that he wrote, Green Cathedrals, about baseball stadiums. And obviously, that's a really nice coffee table book. But Phil, really cool thing that you put together here. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. I want to mention also my Native American name is Wabash Kasiwa Ketiwamak.
So, Phil, tell me about this book and tell me about the reason for authoring something like this.
I grew up in Turtle Creek, Pennsylvania, 7 miles southeast of Pittsburgh. As a child, my father used to take me to 40 or so Pittsburgh Pirates baseball games in Forbes Field, and the Steelers at that time also played in Forbes Field. Now, there were two interesting things about the Steelers playing in Forbes Field. Number one, we would go down on Sunday afternoons and play basketball until the third quarter was over, and then we would go over to Forbes Field, which was only a block away. And what they did was they took the iron right center field gate and pulled it up so fans could leave at the end of the third quarter. But it also left kids like me and my friends to walk in the other direction and go into the ballpark and see the fourth quarter for free. Now, one of the interesting things about that was that we could do then, back in the 50s, something that even no billionaire can do now, which was stand on the sideline. We would stand on the sideline, not that many people there. Steelers might draw 8,000, maybe 15,000, lots of empty room. And so whenever an end caught a pass and was headed for us, watch out, we had to scatter because they might run into us with all their pads and helmets. So we would scatter whenever the player came next to us. Now, one interesting thing I wanted to mention about an interesting fact about professional football gridirons is that they're all different. You've got baseball fields, you've got college football stadiums, you've got minor league baseball parks, you've got high school football fields, you've got multi-purpose stadiums on enclosed fields, domes, fairgrounds, cricket fields, a summer Olympic stadium, a racetrack. Also, as you will recall, a basketball ice hockey arena, because the Bears were supposed to host the NFL title game outside at Comiskey Park. But there was a blizzard, so they moved the game indoors into Chicago Stadium. And an NFL title game was played at Chicago Stadium, where they had just dirt. And that was a fascinating game. Now, one other story I wanted to tell you was, and this is a mystery that has no answer. Maybe Sunday Golfers 43 can figure out the answer. Here's the question. In the late 1950s, the Eagles and the Steelers, who once were one team, the Philadelphia-Pittsburgh Steagles, during the Depression, they played in the late 50s for the NFL championship of the Eastern Division. The game was played in Forbes Field, and in the beginning, the weather was very cold, but not any snow. At halftime, a blizzard came. My father and I were sitting up in the top row of the second deck of right field. That morning, he had come to me and said, "Philip, instead of getting a football helmet face guard for Christmas, how would you like to go see the Steelers play?" I said, "Yes, I've never seen the Steelers play." So we went to see the game. Now, as the third quarter began, something very strange happened. Very strange. When you're at a ballpark or a stadium or a gridiron, and there are lots of people there, 20,000, 50,000, there's a hum. That hum comes from people sitting next to each other, talking to each other. And when you add that up times 50,000 people, you get a big hum. Now, as the third quarter began, that hum started to disappear. And what replaced it? From a very far distance, in the last row of the right center field stands, second deck, all of a sudden we began to hear the voices of all the players, the coaches, the referees, and every word they said, we could hear. Very, very strange. Normally, you couldn't hear any of that. But because the hum was gone, we could hear all these voices. They were swearing, saying bad words because they disagreed with the ref. They were yelling at their coach. The coach was yelling at the players. I've interviewed numerous engineering professors. I'm a professor of philosophy mathematics myself. And none of the engineering professors can even hazard a guess as to why this happened. The end of my story. I'll give you one other story that I think is kind of interesting. And you never know what's going to happen on football gridiron. For example, when the Bears played in Comiskey Park. No, the Cardinals played in Comiskey Park. The Bears played over at Wrigley. Comiskey Park was set up in such a way that they couldn't enclose the end zone on the grass field. They had to mark off the end zone with a corner of it clipped off in midair in the dugout. So you had the situation where a tight end or an end or a halfback would go out for a pass, catch the ball, and literally be in bounds, but be 6 feet above the steps of the dugout. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And you also have, go ahead.
Yeah, a couple of questions. You mentioned the Steagles. The Steagles, they played during World War II, and then you mentioned the playoff game. I think you said 50s, but I noticed in the records there was a playoff game for the Eastern Division in 1947 between the Eagles and the Steelers. Is that the game that you remember going to?
No, because I was born in 49.
Okay.
So I don't know the exact year, but I think it was the 50s.
Got it. You know, one thing, Phil, I wanted to talk to you about is that years ago, when pro football started coming into its own, they played a lot of the football games in stadiums that were designed for baseball. Did you get into that at all? Because I mean, I think that's why you sometimes had
as you said, baseball stadiums were sort of unique back then too. I think they've become a little bit cookie cutter these days, but they were unique. I think of the dimensions of like the Polo Grounds or the fact that the first couple of seasons the Dodgers had to play at the Coliseum, which made for some really
51, 251 to left field at the Coliseum. And they had that big 42-foot screen. And also, you mentioned also the Polo Grounds, which was 500 at various years, 550 or 505 to center field. Now, one of the great accomplishments of my life is that Green Cathedrals did accomplish a change. When I wrote Green Cathedrals, I railed, I screamed, I was angry at cookie cutter stadiums like Riverfront, Veterans, Three Rivers, ugly, ugly two sport stadiums, which were horrible. And I railed against it and said, no. Helmuth Kassenbaum, the Kansas City Architects, HOK, the Kansas City Architects, I went down to their offices in Kansas City and argued with them that they should never build another domed, antiseptic, stereotyped, symmetrical baseball park. They should build separate fields for separate stadiums. And after 3 years of me arguing with them, they did it. Now we have two stadiums in each city, like St. Louis, Pittsburgh, etc. That was an accomplishment that Green Cathedrals got done. And I feel good about that.
Yeah, because I remember going to see the Browns play at Municipal
Municipal.
Stadium.
Municipal.
Municipal Stadium. And you were if you were sitting on the 50-yard line, you were 50 yards away from the field because
Because it was a circle.
because it was a circle and they had to put it right down the center. So
Right.
it was strange. But that was not that unusual back then. You would watch games on TV and you'd see the baseball diamond, you usually a one end of the field or the other, and sometimes they were playing right through the infield. So
Exactly.
it's really changed.
They just about had to use the infield every time they used a baseball park as part of their gridiron. And I'll tell you an interesting story about Municipal Stadium. I've got an interesting story to tell you about every gridiron, but I'll tell you one about Cleveland. When I was 10 years old, I went to my parents and I said, we lived in Pittsburgh. I said, Dad, Mom, can I please fly to Cleveland and see a Browns game at Municipal Stadium by myself? I was 10 years old. And they said, well, are you sure you'll be safe? I said, yes, I'm sure I'll be safe. Said, okay, you can do it. 10 years old. So I flew from Pittsburgh to Cleveland. I had a little Kodak camera case that I had my camera in. I want to take pictures. And inside the camera case, I had my plane tickets. So then at the end of the Browns game, I looked into my camera case and my airplane tickets were gone. How was I going to get back to Pittsburgh? So I got the bus back to the Cleveland airport and I was trying to figure this out. And I went to the gate and I was lucky because there were two gates at gate 53. The first gate was where everybody's lined up to give them their tickets and go onto the airplane. The other gate, there was nobody there. So I walked over to the empty gate. And the stewardess over at the other gate says, may I help you, sir? And I said, no, I'm fine. And I just walked onto the plane. And I got home.
You got home.
I got home. So anyway, football is a wonderfully great, great game.
Phil, it's interesting the study that you've done about all of these stadiums. You mentioned not having cookie cutter stadiums. Why is it so important to you that all of these stadiums are different?
Number one, it's because the Browns and the Guardians deserve their own park for their own identity. Number two, baseball games played in football stadiums stink because what makes baseball great is the fact that they're asymmetrical and Yankee Stadium with right field at 310 is entirely different than Fenway Park. That's what makes baseball great, and what makes football great is that they're different. They're not the same. That's my opinion. Now, let
And
me tell you.
we were talking about Cleveland, and I guess we know a little bit more about Cleveland because we're
Because
from
you're from
North.
Canton.
Yeah,
You're
we're
from
from Canton,
Akron.
North, yeah, Northeast Ohio. Because the Browns also one time, and I know you have this in the book, they played at League Park, which was
Yes.
the Indians' old stadium. In
Indians
fact,
Park.
part of League Park still exists. I'm in that neighborhood.
I've been there. It's
Yeah,
like
I.
a park. It's
It
like a
is. It
park.
is. It is. They still have one of the walls and the ticket office that still exists, I believe. And then they also played when they were the Cleveland Rams, which was before the Browns. They played at Shaw Stadium, which is
I
basically a
remember
high,
Shaw.
yeah, it's basically a high school stadium, and that still exists. I go right into that neighborhood on Thursdays, both neighborhoods, and they're both on the east side of Cleveland. And it's interesting because obviously Shaw was a high, is now a high school stadium, and League Park was obviously the baseball stadium where the Indians played, and people like Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig played at that stadium, in
And
addition to the Browns. Yeah.
that's what's so important to the history of football and baseball is that Jim Brown used to play there. Jim Thorpe used to play there. And you look at Shaw Stadium's over in East Cleveland, built in 23. The Rams played there in 38. Also, we shouldn't forget the Luna Bowl. The Luna Bowl was where the AFL Panthers played in 26 and the NFL Bulldogs in 27 over at Woodland, Woodhill, Ingersoll, and East 110th. Now it's part of an amusement park. Now, one other thing I wanted to mention. Even today, in October 2025, new things are happening which have never happened ever before in a pro football game. For example, on Sunday, the Browns were playing and they were ahead 17 to 14 over the Vikings with less than 10 minutes left in the fourth. And the Vikings tried a 51-yard field goal, which was on a decent trajectory. It was going to be good and it would have tied the game. But dramatically, as it flew towards the goalposts, the kick veered dramatically to the right and went wide. Now, the Monday Star Tribune in Minneapolis covered that in the Daily Delivery podcast and explained that the ball had hit either a wire or a camera cable. It turned out later that it did hit a camera cable, and it was called a bonkers play. Now, it didn't matter that much in how the game ended, but if it had changed the outcome of the game, the NFL would have had egg on its face because the NFL party line was replay assist said the ball did not hit a wire. The ball did hit a wire. The NFL was too ashamed to admit that it did hit a wire. And that's something that's never happened before. At Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, it took a game in London, England to have a new play that's never happened before in the NFL or the AFL or the USFL or the WFL. Never happened before. The field goal was changed by a wire, a cable.
Interesting. And I want to correct one thing I said. The Rams, the Cleveland Rams, played at Shaw Stadium and played at League Park, not the Browns. So I want to correct that. I know, Phil, you have spent time here recently updating your book. Can you tell us about your update?
Yes, I can tell you about the update. The update starts in 1990. And of course, lots of new football stadiums have been built since 1990. And I hope every single one of them is captured in what will become the second edition of Green Gridirons, hopefully in the spring, hopefully published by PFRA. But there's lots of new stadiums. If you go around the CFL, you've got Tim Hortons, you've got new stadiums in Regina and different places. And I hope I've captured all those new stadiums. And some of those new, and all of those new stadiums are pro football. They're not multi-sport, which is good. I'll tell you one thing. I'm looking forward to going up to Winnipeg here in November to see the Grey Cup. My wife and I went to see the Grey Cup back in 70, I think 77, and it was in Olympic Stadium, Montreal, and it was pouring rain the whole game, 70,000 fans, and it was cold. And that was, to me, my introduction to CFL football, which I think is a great sport. They've got 10 more yards to play in. It's a more interesting game.
Do you have from your studies of the stadiums, do you have some favorites of yours from the older stadiums and then the newer stadiums?
Yes. My favorite new stadium is, because I'm biased, it's called Heinz Field. I'll never call it Acrisure, which is a stupid corporate name, but that is a beautiful modern stadium. And of course, I'm biased. I'm a Steelers fan. I like that the best. Now, you got others, and some people who live in Baltimore may think M&T is better, but whatever. Now, in terms of old stadiums, there is absolutely no doubt that the best old stadium, there's an argument, 1920 Soldier Field in Chicago, which unfortunately the Bears are abandoning in 3 years to build a new palace in the suburbs so they can make more money. But Soldier Field has been renovated nicely and it still exists, and I'm glad it's still going to be there for 3 years. I've been to Soldier Field, you get a sense of history. This is where George Halas paced the sidelines. This is where the great Bears players of the past played. Now, the other one is Lambeau Field. And I think Lambeau Field, built in 24, is the best pro football stadium ever built. What they've done, instead of re renovating it in pa patches, they've just taken the original field, which only had 8 or 10,000 seats, and they just built on top of it like a cake. And they keep building, and they've got 6 or 7 different levels. And now they have 70 or 80,000 seats. And one of the reasons I like Lambeau Field the best is that the Packer identity, the Packer passion on the part of the fans is unequaled. The Packers fans love football more than any city in the country, in the world. And I'll tell you an example. One time in somewhere around 2007, the Giants were playing the Packers for the conference championship. And it was cold. And my daughter wanted to go to the game because she wanted to see Brett Favre. She was in love with Brett Favre. And it was his last game as a Packer. And so we drove 6 hours from Minneapolis. It was minus 37 degrees. It was cold. We did not have tickets. We had a budget of $50 we'd spend on each ticket. We watched people peeling out $1,400 bills, paying $1,400 for a ticket. We said, we're not going to spend that kind of money. At the beginning of the fourth quarter, a new car came in. We rushed over. Oh, maybe they have an extra ticket. They were from Minnetonka, right where we were from in Minneapolis. And the guy said, yeah, my roommate thought it was too cold, so I have an extra ticket. How much you want for it? I said, well, to be honest, sir, people have been selling tickets for 1400. We don't have that kind of money. He said, give me a 50. We're okay. So I gave him a 50. My daughter got in, sat in the third row behind the goalposts. And by the, that was the beginning of the fourth quarter. The middle of the fourth quarter, I decided I have a brainstorm. You don't normally get brainstorms, but I got one. I said, look, if I can convince the police officer at the gate to leave, the gate guard had already left. So I went to the police officer. That, you know me, I've been here since the beginning of the game. He said, sure, I know you. I said, sir, if you would just go take a pee, I could get into the stadium for free. He said, I like that idea. And he went off to the men's room and he went and peed. I got into the stadium for free. I went and joined my daughter. Brett Favre, at the beginning of overtime, threw an interception. Eli brought the ball down. They kicked a field goal. And here's another interesting story about sounds. 80,000 fans in Lambeau Field, when the Giants won that game with a field goal, you have never, ever heard 80,000 people leave a stadium so silently. There was not one whisper, there was not one conversation, there was not one noise as 80,000 people dejected left Lambeau Field. And that's why I think Lambeau Field has the spirit of the NFL more than any other stadium.
So, last thing for you here that we want to ask you is
Can't we talk for 10 more hours?
last thing I want to ask you here is just about stadiums moving indoors versus stadiums being outdoors. There's so many people that seem to prefer indoor stadiums now. Do you think football and baseball stadiums are better outdoors?
Absolutely. I think a football game played indoors under a stupid dome without any weather conditions is disgusting. Football, I'm a football referee. I'm a baseball umpire. I have refereed basketball, soccer, everything. I have never canceled a game or postponed a game because of a few drops of rain or snow. The only thing I ever postpone a game for is lightning. The game is meant to be played in the snow. The best thing in the world is to watch a snow game in Lambeau, a snow game in Denver, and watch the players slide around. That's the way baseball, if you watch the Premier League soccer in January, they play in the snow. They play in a foot of snow. That's the way football and baseball should be. Indoor stadiums are shit.
Phil, we appreciate you joining the podcast and appreciate you being a part of it.
I appreciate very much being invited to be with you too. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. There's a new podcast in town, Statman and Robin. We are the dynamic duo of Baltimore sports history.
We have lots of stories to tell about the great and not so great teams and players in Baltimore's rich sports history, and some of the more obscure ones, too.
We grew up together with these teams and players, and we'll add our experiences to these great stories.
Yep, we were there for a lot of them. Join us here on the Sports History Network.